Podcast 55, Jesus' Transfiguration. The Gospel passage for this podcast is Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 to 13. Today's Gospel passage is Matthew's account of the Transfiguration. This is also recorded in both Luke, and Mark's Gospel. And this week, on Friday, the Church celebrated the Transfiguration as a significant event in Jesus' life. Matthew's transfiguration scene is loosely organized around a private gathering of Jesus, Peter, James, and John. Jesus takes them up a mountain. The traditional site for this event is thought to be Mount Tabor, which is 18 kilometers west of the southern end of the Sea of Galilee, quite close to Jesus' Galilean ministry area. It is 575 meters at its highest point, which is about half the height of Mount Perongia, so not exactly what we in New Zealand would understand as a high mountain. But I think we will have a problem in trying to understand this awesome and mind-blowing event. Jesus' transfiguration falls into the category of events which are just difficult to be described. I think it's why in Mark's story of this event, Mark says they were told by Jesus to keep it to themselves and tell no one what they had seen. How do you describe it to other people? It had to be experienced. For this event, Jesus invites the inner circle of his disciples to accompany him, Peter, James, and John. The high mountain is in Scripture often a place where God speaks to the prophets, like Moses. It is a place of revelation and conversation with God. The effect of Jesus' transfiguration is physical and visual. His clothes become dazzling white. Radiant white clothing is associated with God's glory. You can see this in other Bible verses like Daniel 7:9, Mark 16:5, Acts 1:10, and Revelation 3:4. Next, Elijah and Moses join the party. Verse 3 could be translated, not only Elijah, but even Moses. Moses and Elijah are both prophets. They both met God on a mountain. Both were expected in Jewish theology to be part of the end times, the eschatological scenario. Jesus is therefore identified through this association as the ultimate prophet, the one who would come to fulfill the law given by God to Moses. Who speaks up at this point? Good old Peter, feeling more than a little awed and overcome, probably. As we well know, Peter is the disciple who sometimes opens his mouth simply to change feet. He seems to live by a common rule. I always mean what I say. I may not mean to say it out loud, but I always mean it. In this case, Peter makes a suggestion that the disciples build three shelters or booths, one each for Moses, Elijah, and Jesus. This may be linked to his memories of the Jewish festival of Sukkot, or booths, which was celebrated in Jesus' day and is still celebrated by Jews today. The sukkah, or booth, that is built is a temporary structure, usually on a rooftop or in a garden, has tree branches for a roof. So Peter may have recognized it would be possible to build booths as a gesture of hospitality for Moses and Elijah. Peter's suggestion is ignored, however, and events move on without any acknowledgement that he has spoken. Then a cloud overshadows them and a voice from the cloud addresses them. In the scriptural tradition, clouds can serve as divine transport and as an indication of the divine presence, as a place from which God speaks. Again, this evokes Moses and God covering Mount Sinai in a cloud at the time when he gives the law to Moses. A similar event happened with God speaking at Jesus' baptism in Mark 1:11. You are my beloved Son, with whom I am delighted. In this case, on Mount Tabor, the phrase, with whom I am well pleased, has the command, listen to him, added. At this transfiguration scene, the disciples receive an unambiguous declaration and affirmation of Jesus' status as God's Son. also made explicit in this directive from God and the presence of the two Old Testament prophets, is that Jesus is God's spokesperson, the promised prophet like Moses. Because Moses says, as recorded in Deuteronomy 18:15, "The Lord your God will raise up a prophet like me among you from your own people. You must listen to him." At the end of this amazing and for the disciples quite terrifying event, Jesus orders them not to tell anyone what they had seen. Why does Jesus order the three disciples to stay silent about this? Isn't what has just happened in the Transfiguration the greatest ever endorsement of his ministry that anyone could ever have? El Shaddai, which in Hebrew means God of the mountain, has personally affirmed Jesus as his son and given a command to listen to him. Moses and Elijah, the archetypal Jewish representation of the law and the prophets, have met and talked with Jesus. As far as endorsements for a Jewish person go, it just doesn't get any better than this. It's better than Lisa McCaw and Jamie Oliver and Oprah Winfrey all combined. But Jesus forbids making this event public during his time of ministry. Only after his death and resurrection does this event became known through the spoken oral tradition of the disciples and at a later date in the written testimony of the Gospels. Thinking about our experiences, if we have an amazing vision or a real mountaintop experience with God, we must remember that God never meant us to live on the mountaintop. And you can see this in the next part of Matthew's Gospel. The three disciples and Jesus come off the mountain and they come down to the bottom of the valley. And there they find a boy having epileptic seizures. The mother and father are enormously worried and upset about this desperately sick little boy. In other words, the three disciples come down off that amazing mountaintop experience, right smack bang into the problems of real life. Down from the mountaintop and into the valley. But the disciples discover that God is also down in the valley and does not live only or even primarily on the mountaintop. I like the quotation by Henry Drummond, the Scottish theologian, when he said, "God does not make the mountains in order to be inhabited. God does not make the mountains for us to live on the mountaintops. It's not God's desire that we live on the mountaintops. We only ascend to the heights to catch a broader vision of the earthly surroundings below. But we don't live there. We don't tarry there. The streams begin in the uplands, but these streams descend quickly to gladden the valleys below. The streams start in the mountaintops, but they quickly come down the mountain to nourish life in the valleys below." So you and I may experience the very valleys of life with all its problems and troubles and hardships and despondency sometimes. You and I both know that having a mountaintop experience with God doesn't protect us from those other experiences. It is the real world and the real life. After Sundays, there are always Mondays. But God is with us in both places.